Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today, John Galloway and I have an amazing show. John, how are you?
I'm doing great.
I love that momentary silence as if you're on satellite from halfway around the world.
Well, I actually am, but also there's two Johns today.
Yes. I was... I'll be careful about that. but you are the sometimes co-host, so you get to start. And we have with us Brian Noyes, who is the CTO of Soliance. He's a Pluralsight author and has a Pluralsight course on today's topic, which is Breeze. Brian, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming to the show. And I will tell everybody that while we set this up weeks in advance, somehow you and I had a communication snafu and you jumped in at the last minute, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Sure, no problem.
And we have Ward Bell. Ward is the Vice President of Technology at IdeaBlade. He is, in so many ways, a Breeze master and known throughout the industry, especially among MVPs, as a snappy dresser. Ward, how are you?
I am very well, thank you. Good to be here.
And terrific to have you, because Ward has been holding my hand through Angular and Breeze, and we have much to talk about. And finally,
and what a hand that is to hold. What a great hand.
Yes, give the man a hand. And we have John Papa, who is a Microsoft Regional Director and MVP, one of the nicest guys you're going to meet. John, how are you?
I'm well, Jesse. Thanks for having me again.
Yes, back so soon. Glad to have you here. And notice you're the only one I said was nice.
That must mean you want something, right?
That's indeed correct. Today's topic is Breeze.js. And John has a Pluralsight course on Angular and Breeze. And Ward lives and breathes Breeze. And I want to talk to him about his relationship and his company's relationship to Breeze. Brian has a Pluralsight course on Breeze, and John Galloway always has the right questions, so we cannot lose with this group. Let me start it off by asking Ward if he could tell us a very little bit about how Breeze came to be, and specifically what the value proposition is with Breeze.
All right, let me try that. I'm with IdeaBlade, and we've had a long time interest in helping people build applications that execute on the client, distributed applications that execute on the client. And we have been particularly focused on how you manage data on a client. And as we'll see, there are lots of things you need to do when you're holding on to data for a substantial period of time on the client. And then it looked like JavaScript was going to be pretty hot. So we thought, let's bring our experience and expertise to building a framework to help people build client applications in JavaScript. And we brought along our experience and our ideas and some of the APIs from our former efforts in a product called DevForce, which still works on .NET. And that's how we got here.
And Breeze is a JavaScript library that is tied to other JavaScript libraries or not? Is it completely independent? I know that it works well and plays well with Angular and I believe Knockout, but tell me a little bit more about how it fits in.
Yeah, we strive to stick to our knitting. It is first and foremost a client-side library to cope with the data issues that you have. And it's operates at sort of the model back to how you get the data. And there are a lot of great libraries to pick it up from the model going forward to the glass. I think of those as presentation frameworks like Angular and Knockout and Backbone and so forth. And so what we try and do is play nice with those and also play nice with the back end and just focus on delivering the kinds of things that you need when you're writing JavaScript clients that are focused on data. So we stick to right in that slot in there and try and play nice with others.
Okay, Brian, how is it that you came to create a Pluralsight course on Breeze? You were pretty early to the party, I believe.
Yeah, similar to Ward's background from his company's perspective with this, I kind of had some shared legacy with the overall architecture and the patterns involved. I got very involved with Rhea Services in Silverlight, and Rhea Services tried to solve some of the same problems around data-centric distributed clients, pulling back data, doing rich queries, working with that data, sending changes back, basic CRUD patterns, but across the service boundary. And so as soon as I saw Breeze, actually, I got involved prior to Breeze, there was a fledgling attempt by Microsoft called Upshot that kind of withered on the vine, where they were going to try to, you know, mimic the patterns of RIA services with a Microsoft-produced JavaScript library. And at that same time, Breeze got started, Ward started the effort on Breeze. So I was kind of paying attention to both. Upshot didn't go anywhere, so I very quickly jumped on Breeze as the right solution there for the JavaScript space. And it just kind of overlapped with the period where I was getting more and more involved in HTML and JavaScript, rich clients, and single page applications.
Okay, and we'll put a link to your course and to John's course and anything else that Ward thinks is appropriate or any of you wish on the show page. And John, Papa, I have a question for you, but before I do, Ward, you are fairly, I wouldn't say self-effacing, because no one, I think, would call you self-effacing, but you're not one to toot your own horn. And so I need to ask you outright, because I'm not sure I understand this. Were you involved with the original creation of Breeze? How much of Breeze do you personally own?
Oh, it's a team effort. It's not about one person. We have a number of people at my company who have built it. I personally don't actually write the code for it, because we have a nice clean separation between the the people who actually sling the bits and the people who are out there trying to find out what bits we should sling. So, I guess I'm the public face of it, but it's really backed by a core of people.
Fair enough. There was a wonderful Baby Blues cartoon in which the kids ask who won the soccer game, and the mom says, it's not about who won, it's about who played well. And the kids ask, okay, who played well with the most points? But okay, I'll accept your point. John Papa, you also wrote a course on Angular and Breeze. Is that a particularly good fit?
They're terrible together, actually. I mean, nobody should ever bother that combination. No, actually, it's a great fit. It's a great fit. And before that, I did a course on Durandal and Breeze, which is Durandal's another library similar to Angular. And one of the reasons I went down both paths is I wanted to see just how good it was to integrate Breeze with different libraries, you know, to make sure that they actually thought about plugging those into different kinds of SPA frameworks. And it was a really good experience with both of them.
Okay.
Let me ask a question here. John, didn't you at one point try and see what life was like writing a client-side application with just taking care of all the data yourself?
Well, you have to bring that up, don't you? That was not fun. Yes, I did do that. And Ward actually suffered through a lot of that with me. And I think too highly of this effort, but I'd like to think that that effort actually helped shape part of what Breeze became, because we together got to see just how hard and how complicated and how fragile the code was without a solid library behind it to do all the things that Breeze does.
All right, so let me challenge that out of my own ignorance, and then maybe we can get at some of what Breeze does. The first thing that a client is going to want to do is contact the server and get some data and populate a table and then do normal CRUD operations. Is that really hard to do without Breeze?
No.
Okay.
No. Making an AJAX call and then getting the data back and then sticking it on the screen, we can do that with plain old AJAX and then just plain old JavaScript. It's not difficult to do that way.
Okay.
So yeah, that's exactly. Jesse, you can tell me if I'm getting in the way of something, but that was actually, I had a question along that line. Is that okay?
So it's not only okay, please go and don't okay. even question.
So there's really, I've been thinking about this. There's two sides of approaching the same problem. We're kind of meeting in the middle, because we talked about the kind of the heritage of RIA services and Upshot, and that was kind of coming from the, you know, CRUD application, desktop app, line of business kind of, you know, data entry side. So there are kind of some things you just take for granted, like states maintained, and you don't have to worry about kind of data synchronization issues and those sort of things. And then there's the other kind of side, which is the JavaScript, the web dev side of it, where everything's, you know, stateless and, you know, bring your own everything. And so we've kind of like met in the middle, it seems like here. And I'm wondering, like, I think hopefully for people who are familiar with kind of the more CRUD application development pattern, they immediately see kind of the advantage of what's being, you know, brought in here. But from a web development point of view, what is the benefit over, you know, like I could do a file new project. I could create, you know, web API or even MVC to do some services. And then I throw in a bunch of JavaScript libraries. And, you know, what really do I need on top of that?
I think to me, one of the big things is when you start to shift the focus more to the page sticking around longer, excuse me. You know, if you're purely in a post-back mentality, and maybe you just do a couple of little Ajax calls to populate a dropdown or something like that, then there's not much call for something like Breeze. But when you're going to return data to the client and you really are starting to mimic some of the smart client, rich client patterns in the browser, that you're going to keep that data around for longer in the client, you're going to have an ongoing interaction or dialogue between the user and that data without doing a post-back is the big key there. And as soon as you put those qualifiers on it, now you need a lot more support on the client side, for getting that data, maintaining that data, tracking changes, and so on.
I think what Brian was saying there was so very important, and what John, the question John was asking is so very important, because it's just not quite sunk in yet, I think, for the web developer, how very different these things are that we sometimes call them single page applications. And, you know, Brian has this kind of brilliant architectural comparison. It's much closer to the kinds of modalities that we're used to when we build desktop apps, which is completely different from what the web developer is used to thinking about. And until you get that sense that Brian is talking about of how much of the application experience is taking place on the client independent of the server, how infrequently you need to go back to the server and what you go back to the server for, until you grok that, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. So we have to really understand how different single page applications are from, say, MVC, where you're still basically guiding the entire experience from the server side.
Well,
do you agree with that, Brian?
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, absolutely. I agree totally. And that, like I said, what I really focus on is the post-back, avoiding the post-back and keeping that, you know, ongoing interaction with the user without requiring a post-back.
So as a huge fan of Breeze myself, let me play devil's advocate and challenge that for just a moment. And I do firmly agree that there's value there. And when you go into that world, you need Breeze. But why is it, we keep focusing on all the activity on the client and reducing the traffic back to the back end and the post back. Why? Why is that important in this world?
To me, it's mostly about the user experience and not having to refresh the whole page.
Is that a diminishing, I'll be devil's advocate also, is that a diminishing return or a diminishing benefit given the increasing speed of the internet? I just upgraded for next to nothing to 75 down on Fios. And am I really going to see that big a difference between a partial update and a full page update?
So some of it has to do with the latency issue. And as you say, in many environments, that latency issue goes way down. But I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes to the stateful client. So much of the richness of the user experience is involved in, is wrapped up in how much the client knows about what the user is seeing right now on the screen and where they were a couple of minutes ago. And the more state you're able to keep about the ongoing session, the richer the experience can be that the client is having. And those of us who've built desktop clients are really familiar with having a lot of state. Well, having a lot of client state is antithetical to the way you write things in the web world. Basically, you're trying to remember as little as possible, I think, when you're writing a browser app, about where the user is or where they were last a couple of minutes ago and what they were looking at and all that other stuff, because state is kind of, you know, client session state is kind of hard to maintain properly in a properly designed web application. And so the tricks you pay when you're building those are to, how do I minimize the state I have to remember about the user? And I think that comes at a huge cost to the user's experience and the user's productivity. So I see that as much of an issue as I do the latency. Does that make sense, John Galloway?
Yeah, it does. And I was just preparing to jump in anyways. I do feel like that. I feel like there's a big difference in how you design and code an application based on the difficulty of doing something. So for instance, I could build a huge single page application style app in which everything was a postback. And it might even function pretty quickly, but there's a lot of friction in pushing all that state back and forth, writing all that code. For instance, if I have something that's doing, you know, pretty complex, you know, I've got a master details and I'm editing a lot of things and I'm pushing all that state, then I'm worrying about, you know, view models and unpacking and mapping things back and forth, versus if I've got all that state on the client, it's so much simpler to, you know, have multiple things that work together. You know what I mean? There's a lot of friction in, and I, you know, when I'll talk to developers and I'll kind of do an intro on MVC, and then they'll say, okay, great. Here's my app where I'm doing all these things and I've got, you know, editing a large, you know, real world data. And then I have to tell them, well, that's a little trickier. And now you need a view model and now you need all this kind of logic on the back end to kind of map that stuff back and forth. It works great for simple web interactions, web page style. But when you get into these data, you know, these data heavy applications, then it starts to get harder.
Exactly. I mean, I think, you know, imagine when you're trying to like fill out the classic customers' orders, order details and all that stuff. And usually when, you know, you're just sitting in front of it and they're sort of building up the order and they're building up all this information that's around it and reaching for it, and they don't know quite what they're doing, it stays in this sort of temporary invalid state as they begin to sort of pivot around that order as it's evolving to get a little information about other products they want to have there, a little of this, a little of that. And they can't save it yet because it wouldn't be valid. And then something comes along and completely distracts them and they have to run over someplace else and start on another order. And then they have to come back. And so maintaining this, all these pieces and parts and orbiting around it is just very hard to do in a web metaphor. And that's like daily bread and butter for a desktop application. That's what we've been doing all this time when we've been writing desktop applications all along. And for many of us, and I think many of us who came out of the WPF and Silverlight and all that tradition, I mean, we're used to living in that world.
And I think, you know, part of the motivation here that's also important to point out is this shift that more businesses and enterprises are actually looking to HTML as the way to build out a desktop application. You know, in their mind, it's still going to be present on the user's desktop for long periods of time and interactivity, but they're leaning towards HTML these days because of all the twists and turns of different UI stacks, particularly in the Microsoft space. And so that's one motivation. And then the mobile space with hybrid HTML apps that are packaged as apps is another one, where it's really more of a desktop app in a sense, in terms of its lifetime and interactivity, but it's going to happen to be built with HTML and JavaScript.
Well, let's just connect the dots to make this as obvious as I can, because I want to make sure that I'm understanding you, Ward. What I understand you to be saying is that many of the issues that are bread and butter for desktop issues and hard on web issues are coming to web applications. And therefore, that's what's hard about data, is that there's a lot more management and maintenance of the data on the client, and something like Breeze can greatly relieve that strain. Did I get that accurately?
That seems that way to me. It's no longer simply a matter of grabbing data and chucking it onto the screen and, you know, you're living with it. So that's exactly right. And when you have that aha moment, then you start to say, well, what are the kinds of things I need to do when I'm holding on to state, when I'm holding on to data for an extended period of time and working with it for an extended period of time? And once you've made that, turned that corner, now you can start to take inventory of the things that a Breeze can do.
So if I could interject, let me again look at the other side of this. Is I like to explain to people when they shouldn't use Breeze, for example, because I think this helps frame it up and where it's valuable. A lot of people getting into JavaScript development these days, and HTML5 and CSS, they're starting not from SPA, you know, from building a full-fledged app, but they're starting from, I've got an MVC or WebForms app out there, or PHP or whatever, and I have some kind of island of richness that I want to add just to that page. Maybe there's a section on my screen where I want to take a div and replace that with a search results, and that's it. So you have a search result, you have a filter, and the data comes back. When you try to do that, I mean, really, all you're doing is bringing back data and replacing that section and not having a refresh. Something like, you know, Knockout or Angular to do that with Ajax or $HTTP is perfect. You don't need Breeze there. Why? Because you're not adding any value other than I just need to get the data and show it. If that's all you're doing and it's a flat list of search results, there's really no advantage to using the other rich features. And I think that's where a lot of people start from and go, well, you know what? All I'm doing is getting data and displaying it and then I'm throwing it away. And if that's the case, a lot of times these other libraries really aren't going to add value. But when you start building a full-fledged application, as Ward and Brian are suggesting, and I do as well, that's when you start seeing, you know, what happens when I have four screens that are maybe part, some of them are visible, some of them are not visible, and I need to share data across them, and I change one value on one, I want it to reflect on the other three. I don't want to be sending messages all over the place. I don't want to have to refresh or post back to the server. I just want it to work with no extra code. And that's where things like Breeze really start to light up in those situations.
Well, let's take that example, John Papa, where I have data on one page. It's hard to talk about different pages in a spa, but I have data in one part of my application, and then I go to another part, and I don't want to send messages. Am I accomplishing that because of the data binding support, or what is Breeze doing that makes that easier?
So, yeah, let's frame it up in that situation. Let's say you're on a page where you're looking at customer information, and then you go to another page for orders, and that same customer or other customers are on that same page. Instead of going and getting that information again, Breeze has already retrieved that customer. They've retrieved customer Brian and John. And then you go to the other page, it shouldn't have to go back and figure out who are the customers again. It knows all about that information. So Breeze will have cached that information on your first call in the client. And then on the second time, when you go to the second page, it didn't maybe have the order information, so you go get that off the server. But then when it comes back, it sees, hey, look, there's these two customers, and the IDs for those link up with this order. I'll just magically, you know, match those up. And that way you just get that data. So there's a lot of, and Ward mentioned early on, there's a lot of richness in I don't have to make as many trips back to the server because once I get that data, I know I already have it, and Breeze is smart enough to connect the dots. Now, of course, then you might say, well, what about stale data? Well, you know, and in any app, you've got to know, well, once I cache data on the client, it could be outdated. So up to you on when you actually want to force it to go back to the server and get it. And you do have full control over that, too.
Okay. Ward, are you comfortable with my going to this little inventory to see if that maps up with what you were saying about the kinds of issues that come up when you're confronted with this kind of application?
I think we're all comfortable with that. So fire away. I think, John, you know, we should take note of what John already mentioned there, which is A, caching it so that you don't have to make extra trips, and B, what you get from object graphs. Because in real applications of the kind we're talking about, you're never talking about just one thing. You're talking about a web of related objects that we imagine navigating to from one to the other, like we go from customer to orders and order to line items through navigation properties. And we would just like that graph to build. So what John was talking about, hey, you know, if I can get that, if somebody can maintain that for me, that's great. That solves that problem of not having to pull down entire graphs of things if they can be maintained locally. So we can move on to another one, like maybe you're going to go to what happens when I change data.
Well, before you go there, you mentioned graphs, and one of the points that's on this page is flatten entity graphs. Does that go beyond what you were saying, or is that the idea that, well, tell me what you mean by flatten in that context?
Well, I don't have the page in front of me, but you may be talking about the capacity to do projections.
Yes, it looks like it.
Yeah. So, and that gets into the querying language, which if your server supports an OData-ish querying language, and it doesn't have to be an OData service to do that, I want to hasten to add. We can do that kind of thing in Node and Mongo too. But if it has a richer querying experience, then I am able to compose queries on the client. I don't have to have everything a client might ask me to do baked into some service endpoint. I have some flexibility in terms of composing them. And one of the things I can do is, you know, I mean, I can filter and page and order and all that. And I can also take related objects and flatten them out, or I can omit properties, all of that stuff initiated from the client, so I don't have to keep writing a lot of server code to anticipate everything that every client might want to do. And so that's the querying facility, and it includes projections, which you can think of as a flattening thing. And does that make sense? And Brian, do you have another way of saying that might be clearer for people?
No, I think that was well stated. I mean, it's all about you know, putting more power into the client's hands to express the query that needs to run on the server side, but still leaving the server in control to make sure that the client only gets data they're supposed to get.
Now, back when I was building larger database applications early web days, there was a very strong feeling that databases do some things very well, and one thing they do very well is optimize queries. Has the world changed, or are you still seeing stored procedures on the server, and what you're talking about is more dynamic querying that's interactive?
I think of this as link for multiple tiers is what it really boils down to. You know, in .NET, we've gotten used to being able to formulate these rich queries through link with wheres and order bys and takes and skips and selects and so on. And this just extends that language to the JavaScript client and allows it to transmit its intention for a query across the wire to the back end. From there, whether it executes all the way down at the database through an MD framework, through a dynamically generated query, or it executes through a data layer through a stored proc that can be optimized by the DBA, it's that the server is going to produce a certain candidate result set, which the client can then further reduce through its own filtering, ordering, and so on.
Great. That was very helpful. Ward, how close is your link-like querying to link? If I know link well, am I going to pick this up right away?
Well, others should judge. I would hope that it reminds you of the facility you have with link for composing queries. I do think that it's important to emphasize that, and Brian said it really nice, it's about the client expressing his intention in terms of the model that he or she sees. What actually happens on the server side can be a completely different matter. It could be that there's an absolute one-for-one parallelism straight through to the database, but it doesn't have to be that way. All the client is saying is, like, I want these things snapped together in this particular way. And this linkish style of expressing it is pretty potent for expressing what you want as a client to get from a server. But what the server actually does with it is up to them.
John Galloway, does all of this work and play well with Microsoft technology?
Well, yeah, and so I was actually going to ask about that. So, I mean, there's an interesting post on Breeze being handcuffed to .NET. So I think that you've done a lot of work so that it works very well with Microsoft technology, to the point that people are assuming that that's all it does. But Ward, you've got a post saying that technically you don't necessarily have to use .NET. Is that true?
Not were you lying? No, I was not lying, and we were doing our very best to illustrate that. So, for example, we have samples that show that they've been done with a Ruby on Rails backend that's talking to MySQL with no RM in sight, well, whatever Rails provides. And then we have another one that uses Node and Mongo, all right? Clearly not relational, no EF, no link on the server side. And there are various ones that can go against an in-memory database or against, you can use it to hit some arbitrary third-party service like ESPN or Edmunds Car Service. So we've worked very hard to take that statement, and it's a very serious statement. Breeze is first and foremost, a client-side JavaScript library, and you can run it against anything that speaks HTTP and JSON. And we've taken that and we tried to go further by creating some samples with these non-Microsoft technologies to sort of seal that thought, to let you know that you can go out there and do it. You don't have, you like DTOs? Fine, go with DTOs. You don't like entity framework? You want to use in Hibernate? Have fun. You don't want to use any ORM at all? Fine, have fun. And we're just trying to show that that's not necessary. All that we're offering with this query language, with this OData-ish query language, is to provide a familiar mechanism for expressing the client's intent about what they want. And how you do it at the back end, we're going to try and help you as best we can. And it's like butter if you use EF and SQL Server. But really, if you've got the talent to create a server experience of any kind, we should be able to play nicely with it.
So to try and summarize how you described this to me before, it's if you happen to be using, you know, any framework, you know, possibly a web API on the back end, things are going to go very simply for you. Everything's going to naturally fall into place. If not, you're not, it'll work well with other things as well. But you're definitely going to have a great experience if you're using, you know, like any framework, OData and all that, that plugs in very easily.
Yeah, you don't have to write anything. But, you know, I think you can have a great experience with no EF and no ORM at all. I mean, you know, it's been very easy at all. Maybe you don't offer the richness of the querying on the client. And, you know, there's a lot of people who don't believe that the client should query. All right. They think you should just hit some, you should know what you want, hit some endpoint and get it. Hey, that's cool. You know, querying is an important part, but it's not what Breeze is all about, even though it sort of seems like the marquee feature. And maybe that's a good time to sort of segue it through to the next thing is like, so what would Breeze do for me if I didn't care about querying?
I've got a question.
Go ahead, John.
What would Breeze do for me if I didn't care about querying?
I would jump in and say, you know, to me, Breeze is more about the editing scenarios than the querying. The querying is a great feature. And certainly puts a lot of power there, like I said, into the client's hand to express what they want. And like Ward mentioned before, from a productivity perspective, not having to explicitly declare every single variation of collections and objects you're going to return to given clients. But editing is really where Breeze starts to shine to me, because that's where you've now got this cache that we've talked about before. You've got change tracking on those objects in the cache, which plays nicely with data binding technologies on the client side. And you've got kind of a centralized management of what's changed, what's its state, being able to validate it and pushing those changes back to the server at the point where you decide it's time.
Yeah, one of the things that I like to say when I get involved in Breeze is if you look at that list of features that's on the Breeze.js website, you know, there's a lot of great features there that to me, they're really sugar. You know, they're really sweet. They're awesome. I love having them. But as Ward mentioned early on, when I wrote that application that was a hefty duty data intensive application without Breeze, there's a lot of features that Breeze has that, quite frankly, wouldn't have won me over just to redo it. So, for example, querying like link. I love the fact that I can write these rich queries using a link-like syntax, but that's not the reason I switched over to Breeze. The reason I switched over to using Breeze is because there were two main things that were extremely painful. And there might have been more, but the two that stick out of my head is one is the caching, which we already brought up, and the other is the navigation to multiple object graphs. So having customers with orders and orders with products and so on and so forth. Having that kind of a structure on the client and being able to maintain it without having something doing that for you, it was really complicated. And it's not hiding any code here. If you go check out my course, the first spa course I did for Pluralsight, there's something like 1,800 lines of JavaScript that I use to manage and maintain all of that. Now the code that I have in my app is more like 300 lines of code. And most of it is just writing queries, which you're going to need that anyway. And I've got tons of queries and lots of data access. So to me, the code is so much more maintainable. And now instead of focusing on how do I cache data and do object navigation, I just get that for free. And I can just focus on where do I got to go to get my data? And once it comes back, what should the user experience be like? So I actually feel like, you know, Breeze is doing the hard work for me and I can just focus on the app and the user experience. So to me, don't say, and I'm not saying anybody here saying this, but don't think that querying like link or doing change tracking or, you know, the fact that it works really well with, you know, flattening graphs, those are all cool, but that's not the hard thing. You can still do that kind of stuff outside of Breeze. Where it really pays off is the stuff that you can do outside of Breeze, but would just make you go bald over. And that's where I bought into it.
So what's the cost? If you're getting that much benefit, what are you paying to use Breeze?
So that's a good question. You know, pulling in Breeze is not heavy as far as getting started. There's some upkeep in the code. I mean, basically, you have to include the script. You've got to download it. And you need to crank up what you call this entity manager. And there's a couple lines of code to get this entity manager going. Think of the entity manager as basically your traffic cop between you and Breeze to let it know what it needs to get for you. So there's a couple lines of code to get that kind of going out of the box. And if all you're doing is making two AJAX calls in your app to get data back for search results, you're going to feel like, you know what? I could have written those queries in 20 lines of code. Why did I bother with Breeze? But when you're writing a large application, that's where you're going to be like, you know, it took me a half an hour to get going with Breeze, and it saved me days after that.
Ward, what's the relationship between IdeaBlade and Breeze? There's nothing overt on the Breeze site about IdeaBlade.
Yeah, that's a good good point. We have the copyright or whatever the heck it is when you have an open source product. It's an open source product, so you know you can go up to GitHub and get it and all of that. We see it as central to some of our professional services that we offer around building single page applications. And that's the IdeaBlade company that does that kind of thing. We're a boutique shop, so we can't really do it for everybody. And we like to think that there will be others who will be able to build some service, professional services around using Breeze in their applications. But that's the commercial relationship, if that's what you're asking.
Yes, I think I was, and also asking exactly how the ownership works. And what you're saying is that while IdeaBlade created this, it is open source. People can get it, they can fork it, they can use it.
They can fork it, they can tell, you know, we'll take pull requests and, you know, the usual things that you do. Obviously, we take leadership and ownership over the product direction. We have a very active Stack Overflow and user voice that we do our best to keep up with.
So, and just to make sure it's completely clear, it's a free product to use, meaning there are open source projects out there that still have a cost associated with them. So the model is it's free, grab the code, use it. You owe nothing. You don't have to register or whatever. If you would like to pay IdeaBlade, they're going to be the experts who can help you do more or, you know, extend it or whatever, right?
Absolutely. You can buy a technical support package from us. You can ask us to do some mentorship. You can ask us to help you review your architecture or take it all the way through and build a whole application with you. And there are people who do the gamut of that. And, you know, I'm also hopeful because it's a one big world out there that companies like Soliance will also see some opportunities building things for their customers around this problem.
So if I'm, you know, okay, I'm sold. I want to use this. So I go to Breeze.js and I look at, you know, first of all, I got to point out, you've got some great samples and documentation there. This is an example of what other open source applications should aspire to. And also points out kind of the advantage of a company backing an open source project as opposed to, you know, hey, check out our GitHub. We have some stuff on our wiki. You've got the live tutorial, which is awesome. But so then let's say, okay, I'm sold. How do I actually go about, you know, file new project, do something with Breeze?
Well, we have some NuGet packages that you can hit. I'm a big fan of, for a lot of people, they're starting out and they want to build, you know, they didn't come to build a data layer. They came to build an application. And so I'm kind of interested in what some of the other folks on this podcast have to say about the best way to proceed that way. For example, I you know, John has his hot towel. Maybe he wants to take a second to talk about that.
Do talk about hot towel, John Papa, because that is certainly my inclination to use as a launch point for both Angular and Breeze.
Yeah, it's a great starting place for right now the Visual Studio Microsoft developer. And I say that specifically because Hot Towel is a NuGet package. So by running NuGet, you can go into hottowel.angular. That's the name of the package. And it downloads for you some of the core pieces of Angular. Not all of it, but just the pieces I feel are core, like basically Angular itself. And then the pieces that allow you to have routing and navigation and a little bit of animation too. Because while people aren't crazy about animation in general, once you have it, you start realizing the user experience benefits that it gives you at a very low cost. So in addition to those three things that it pulls down, now the first question most people have when they stare at a blank project is, what do I do? I mean, where do I create these different views and how do I tie them together and route from one to the other? And what kind of setup cruft do I have to do to get Angular going? Well, what Hot Towel strives to do is says, you know what? Don't worry about that. I'll take care of that for you. I'll give you some quote unquote best practices to jumpstart you. And I start people off with a very simple two-view app with Angular using those features. And I throw in a couple of helper libraries that I find are very helpful, along with a little bit of CSS and layout that's using some responsive design with Bootstrap. And basically the goal that I had was get people started, but make sure that when you start with this framework, with this Hot Towel, that it's not really adding anything to it other than what you could already get in your own. And the important part is you're not having to delete 20 files after you install it. I have a big problem with frameworks and libraries and tools that say, all right, start here. And then the first thing they do is they install 50 files in your project. And the next thing you have to do is delete 40 of them. That doesn't help anybody. That's called a demo. If you want to get started and actually be able to build off something, that's where Hot Towel helps you say, this is where you should start. And at this point, you can start building your app and just change what you need, but you don't have to change a whole lot.
Brian has a great course on Breeze. It's a really good way to learn about Breeze directly. And I'm kind of interested in his thoughts about how he would recommend, Brian, you're right there. How, Brian, would you recommend people get into this game?
I have a little bit different perspective in that I tend to like to bring things in one at a time. Kind of a more extreme form of what John just said. I think the Hot Towel is a great starting point. If someone's setting out and they already know ahead of time, I'm going to use, you know, they've decided I want to compose with Angular or with Durandal and Knockout, and they want to, you know, use the different variants of Hot Towel there to just get them all in place in a single step. I guess I tend to be a little more anal myself and bring things in, you know, one at a time at the point where I'm ready to start coding against it. So for me, the NuGet packages are more than sufficient to just pull those in, you know, at the point where I go to use them. Also along the lines of what John was saying, that I don't want a bunch of sample code in there that I'm going to have to extract, and Hot Towel doesn't do that. But when I'm using a predefined template like that, there's sometimes a, you know, just a perception that this template's going to put stuff in there that I might have to take out. So starting with an empty ASP.NET project, in my case, you know, if I'm doing the Microsoft backend, and then adding in the NuGets, one for the client, one for the server, as I compose the different pieces into my solution.
Let me say from a newbie point of view that there are two ways, there are many ways, but two main ways that I see approaching Breeze for getting started. One is to really immerse yourself and understand in detail what's going on. The other is to understand it just well enough and then use something like Hot Towel and Google and all the other resources you can bring to bear to build your application as a variant on what's already there. So you start with Hot Towel and you say, okay, a page exists. I want to create another page. How did he do it? Let's do that. And then you build your architecture in a evolving, get it working, keep it working kind of way. It may not be ideal, but it is a very fast way to become fairly proficient.
Well, and I think part of where I'm coming from and describing it the way I did is that, at least with some of the people I've worked with on this, they're bringing these new capabilities into an existing web application. So it's not so much a start up front with the new template type scenario. It's more that they've, you know, got that existing website with web forms or MVC, and they're starting to build out these islands of functionality, as John described earlier, that are going to be more interactive, and they want to start doing more of a client-side experience for them. So the, you know, NuGet approach allows that more incremental into an existing project. But I agree that, you know, if you're setting out up front and for, you know, the masses out there who are more just on the productivity path of give me what I need to get started and I'll start coding this thing up, the Hot Towel approach is the better path there.
Let me switch subjects briefly. Ward, can you talk a bit about validation and talk about why I would want Breeze's validation when HTML gives me some and Angular gives me some, and ServiceStack gives me. I mean, there's a lot of pieces that are taking care of validation. So what is Breeze bringing to the party?
Well, first I want to note that to learn about some of the basics of how Breeze validation works, Brian has a lot of material in his Pluralsight course on that. But let me step back a minute to sort of say what's the issue here. If you're going to live with some data and you're going to allow users to enter it, obviously in the long run, you're going to have to validate it on the server because you can't trust the client. But from a user experience point of view, you'd kind of like to let the user know right now that they have a problem rather than have them wait for the server to come back and tell them, nah, 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 bad boy. You want some kind of immediate feedback. So there's real user experience value to having validation on the client. So then you have to say, how do I know what I'm doing there, and how do I convey that to the end user? And the typical, the HTML way that you've been talking about is to sort of inscribe the rules, the validation rules, in the UI itself, and that's what HTML5 is about. You know, you're saying right in the HTML, this is required, or this has a max length, or whatever. You've got your very primitive business rules, and you can make custom business rules, but they're expressed in the HTML. And that's the same with Angular's validation. And for my money, that's confusing things because the rules that we're talking about really are aspects of the model. They're part of the business logic of the model. It's the model that has the required field. It's the model that knows that the order date has to be before the ship date or that the name can't be more than 50 characters. And that's true no matter what UI you put over it. So the idea that I would have to hunt around for every place on the UI where a property is exposed and put the business rule in the HTML seems wrong to me. I don't know if it seems wrong to you, but certainly in the desktop world, we've always felt that was not the right place for it. That's model logic. And so what Breeze allows you to do is bake validation logic right into the object itself. It's more your entity is more than a data bag. It's more than a collection of property data. It's got rules and behavior in it. And these include validation rules. And Breeze gives you a place to register those rules. It can, in some cases, again, if you're on the happy path, it can pick up some of the rules that are come to you from the server. But it has a whole validation mechanism. It'll validate it at certain scheduled times, and it'll store the validation messages inside the object so that they can be expressed in the UI in a very simple way when you're ready to surface those things. And an example of that is a directive that we have in our Breeze Labs called zvalidate for Angular. And you just throw that guy onto, say, an input box, and it knows that you're binding to, say, a person, and that you're binding to a person's first name, and that the first name is required and it has to have some length. And it knows that, but on the HTML, you can't see that. All you see is that you said, yeah, I want that input box to be validated. And the directive, just takes care of the fact that whatever rules apply to the first name are surfaced in the UI in a nice way, so that if it's required and you don't put a value in, you get a visual expression of the problem. And that's the way I think it should be. I think the HTML should simply say, I want to see this validated. I don't know what that means. I'm delegating that to the model and let the model do the validating as it needs to. And that's a baked in part of Breeze. And I think that's pretty powerful.
John, you have a project that I believe you're referring to as work in progress. Tell me what that's about and how that relates to Breeze.
So, yeah, one of the things that Breeze made easier for me as I was putting together this one application was I had a user story where I wanted to be able to save data on the screen or not save data. So I wanted to be able to save the data or move along and then have this like set of changes that I could come back to. And you call it work in progress, for example. And I wanted this to be a good user experience. For example, often we're going to force user to save or cancel data before they move on. And what they really want to do is they want to leave the page in a change state and then come back to their work in progress later, you know, perhaps even after closing the browser. So this is going to require things like, you know, immediately you need to know change tracking. Has anything changed? I need to be able to talk to local storage and then serialize my objects, which might be complex object graphs, and then rehydrate those complex object graphs back into my model. And then all at the same time have visual indicators all over the application to let them know this thing is saved, that thing is over here. You know, you've got unsaved changes that you may want to come back to later. So doing that kind of thing, you know, there's a lot of moving parts. And then as we moved further along with Breeze in this application, I started realizing that I already had all the pieces of the puzzle between Angular and Breeze to do this. So what I really ended up doing was using Breeze to basically serialize out those complex object graphs, save it off to local storage, and then when we come back to those pages, you know, just rehydrate them, suck them back in. And it's actually quite simple in a lot of ways because it's really just one method that Breeze will export the entities and then import the entities back in. So it actually ended up being a lot easier than we thought it would be to do this kind of a thing because of Breeze. In fact, the hardest part was just the visual indicators. And I don't mean the coding for it, but just figuring out how should I tell the user that they still have changes. And this was basically a user story that evolved not because we wanted that user story exactly to use Breeze in the beginning, but because Breeze enabled this to actually light up more features than we thought we originally could.